So we can see here that
basically, as we discussed at the beginning of the last class, the Bhagavad Gita is divided up into three lots of six. The first six chapters deal predominantly with Karma Yoga. Middle six chapters deal with Bhakti. And the final six chapters deal predominantly with, not completely, because as Prabhupada points out time and time again in the purports, Krishna is actually only teaching devotional service. Bhakti, that's the main point. But still, in flavour or in prominence, if you like, the dominant flavour or the dominant feature of the final six chapters is jnana or knowledge. And how jnana, because it's interesting, you know, karma can lead to bhakti. And in fact, you know, karma has to be also somewhat supported by knowledge. You know, as mentioned in the fourth chapter, how sacrifice is meant to bring us to the point of transcendental knowledge. So, you know, in one sense, all of these activities are ultimately meant to be brought to bhakti, and they all they find their place or their purpose or their worth, if you like, their value in being used in Krishna's service. Obviously, everything is of value when it's used for Krishna. I've noticed in when Prabhupada got the opportunity to make the Hare Krishna record, the first recording, and the devotees explained to Prabhupada, you know, what it meant, and Prabhupada's response was, yes, if this will increase the preaching, then we must do it. Prabhupada's mood was, if we can use it in Krishna's service, it's going to increase the preaching, then let's do it. And it's interesting, you know, that Hare Krishna record, Prabhupada got the payment for it. On occasion, the man who made the record would come. Actually, the man who made the record owned the record. He had the royalties for it. But he would come and give Prabhupada donations, $3,000, on occasion, sometime after the whole thing. The interesting thing is that record found its way into the hands of John Lennon, George Harrison, and the Beatles. And as a result of that, that's how they started chanting Hare Krishna and got an interest in Krishna consciousness. So it's, you know, it's amazing. Prabhupada saw an opportunity to use whatever facilities, whatever materials, so-called material facilities, and if it could be connected to preaching, and Prabhupada would embrace it enthusiastically. And you can see what kind of results. Amazing. Or, you know, by taking advantage of that opportunity, he was able to influence John Lennon and George Harrison. And, you know, George Harrison played a big role in he helped Prabhupada print the Krishna book. He gave the devotees Bhaktivedanta Manor, Apple Records, made the Hare Krishna mantra into a number one hit all over the world. In Australia, I remember when I was a kid, must have been 68 or 69, I remember I was living in Port Mary, and I can remember that record. So anyway, jnana can lead to devotional service. So in this chapter, in the 13th chapter, basically, as we just discussed the other day, there's six items of knowledge: prakriti, nature, internal nature; purusha, the enjoyer; chetra, the field of action; chetra gya, the knower; jnanam, knowledge; and gyanam, the object of knowledge. So the first seven verses, the topic has been introduced, and Krishna has described the chetra and the chetra gya, right? The etc. is the field of activities. Not only has he described the field of action, the field of activities, but also the reactions, or some, what do we call it? Reactions that come about as a result of the interaction between the chetra and the chetra-ga, or the knower of the field of activities, the spirit soul trying to enjoy. He gets certain reactions back. So there's a description of the field of action. Then there's a description of the chetra-ga, the knower. But this knower is actually made up of... There's two knowers that are described, right? There's us, the living entity, Brahman, right? Vedanti tattva vidas, jnanam yad jnanam advayam, brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti samyute. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanti tattva vidas, jnanam yad jnanam advayam. This knowledge of the Absolute, described in the Bhagavatam, is manifest in three phases. Right? So you have the Brahman feature, which is the living entity. You have the Paramatma feature, which is the super soul. And of course you have Bhagavan, which is Krishna, the source of all of these. They're all spiritual by nature. So they're all qualitatively the same. But they are, you know, they're differentiated by different qualities. My favourite example, Prabhupada's example, is the, you know, milk, sweets, rasgulla, sandesh, burfi, right? It's all milk and sugar, basically. Huh? But burfi is different to sandesh, and sandesh is different to rasgulla. But they're all milk and sugar. So they're all qualitatively the same, but differentiated. So, chetra-ga is divided up into two. That's the living entity, who's the knower of the field of activity. That's his body. And then there's the paramatma, or the super soul, who's the knower of the field of activity, but of the total field of activity. Huh? Awesome. So, understanding of all of this is knowledge. And there'll be a further elucidation in these next verses. From 8 to 12, we have, and now 7 to 6, we have a description of the field of action and the reactions that come about as a result. From 8 to 12, Krishna explains the process of knowledge, how to acquire knowledge, especially for devotees. We'll have a look at that in a minute. And then in text 13, Krishna introduces the concept of Brahman as the living entity, the spirit soul. Right? And then in texts 14 to 19, five texts, Krishna pretty much explains, 14 to 18, he describes the super soul. Right? He has hands and legs and arms and eyes everywhere, it mentions. So, make sense? Yeah. So, and Prabhupada explains this. And also, Gyan, this is the object of knowledge. The object of knowledge is the, it's described here as the Gyan, is described here as the understanding of the super soul, the soul. Of course, there's the interaction of the field of action, or the knower of the field with the field of action. So, pretty much we're covering third, fourth, and fifth and sixth items of knowledge in these next verses.
So, let's have a look.
So having described the knowledge of the field and the knower of the field as the living entity and the super soul, Krishna now explains the process of knowledge, beginning with humility and culminating in realization of the absolute truth. So that's verses 8 to 12. 20 items are described. By understanding the difference between the body, the soul, and the super soul, and by following the process of knowledge, the soul can transcend dualities, realize his eternal subordination to Krishna, and attain the supreme destination. So, let's have a look here. I'm going to quote. Now, in the 19th verse, in the purport, Prabhupada explains what this is all about. What I've discovered in studying the Bhagavad Gita, if you want to find out what a section, if you want to find out what something is, is what's going on in a particular section, sometimes, very often it's good to look at the first purport in that section. It's also good to look at the last purport of the previous section, because Prabhupada very often summarizes things. And then says, and in the next in the next chapter, blah, 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 will take place, right? Or at the end of a section, then Prabhupada will summarize. So throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada actually leaves hints on what's happening. So from the purport of text 19 in the second paragraph, Prabhupada explains the topics. He says, now to summarise, so I'm actually quoting from the verse 19, but this is just so we get an understanding of where we're going. One may understand that verses 6 and 7, beginning from Maha Bhutani and continuing through Chaitanya Dvitihi, analyse the material elements and certain manifestations of the symptoms of life. Manifestations of the symptoms of life. That's text 7. So what are the symptoms of life? Here we go. Desire. I want it. Hatred. I don't want it. I want it. I don't want it. This is, I'm looking at text 7. Just Prabhupada describes the symptoms. So there's the Mahabhutani. They're the different, all of the different elements, right, that make up the field of activities. And then we get the symptoms or the reactions or the actions, if you like. Hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, that's the total of the whole thing. Life symptoms and convictions. The field of activities and its interactions. Yeah. So, come in. You're missing out on all the fun. Where are we? These combine to form the body or the field of activities. So that's 6 and 7. And verses 8 through 12, from Amanit Vam through Tattva Gyanata Darshanam, describe the process of knowledge for understanding both types of knower of the field of activities, namely the soul and the super soul. Then, verses 13 through 18, beginning from Anadi Mat Param and continuing through Hriti Sarvasya Vishtitam, describe the soul and the Supreme Lord, or the super soul. Okay, so please, that covers what's going on. Now, there's some interesting points that we can have a look at here. So, Prabhupada mentions here that if we follow this process, these processes, then we can understand these things, the field of activity, the knower of the field of activity, knowledge, and the object of knowledge. By following these 20 processes of knowledge acquisition, if you like, one can become self-realized. The most important item Prabhupada mentions is what? What was the most important item that Prabhupada says? For those who have read it, hey, all. Welcome.
Welcome.
What's the most important item? Bhakti Sara? That's the first item. But the most important item, because you can be a very humble materialist and it doesn't get you anywhere. You know, humility, in one sense, a tree is humble, but he doesn't make a lot of spiritual advancement as a result. A blade of grass is humble because everybody just treads on him and he's just bows down. Self-realization. Yes. What's the... what is it? The most important point, this is in the paragraph at the top. The most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So, you know, the whole purpose of these 12 items is come to the point of devotional service. If we engage in any of these 12 items without coming to the point of devotional service, then it's a failure in one sense. But each of these 12, and Prabhupada makes the point, these activities are not reactions or as a result of the interaction between the Chetraga and the Chetra, the field of activity, but rather these are actually transcendental, especially when they're engaged in devotional service. So, essential to making progress in devotional service, Prabhupada says in the last paragraph of the purport to 8 and 12. If anyone wants to compete with God, and so this is this point that you mentioned, Bhakti Sir, humility. If anyone wants to compete with God and at the same time make advance in his spiritual knowledge, he will be frustrated. Right? We can't compete with Krishna. It's futile. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. And we'll talk about that in relationship to a very important point in a minute. But here's the thing, and Prabhupada says, to think oneself God is most puffed up. You know, this is the Prabhupada is knocking the Mayavadis. They think, well, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. We've just fallen into a little bit of illusion. Although the living entity is always being kicked by the stringent laws of material nature, he still thinks, I am God, because of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is amanitva, humility, amanitvam. One should be humble and know that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Due to rebellion against the Supreme Lord, one becomes subordinate to material nature. One must know and be convinced of this truth. That when we become Krishna's servant under Krishna's protection, and Krishna says, Daivahiyeshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite. So Krishna says that, you know, the material energy is very difficult to overcome. Actually, it's impossible to overcome the material energy by our own efforts. But if we surrender to Krishna, then Krishna releases us. He instructs Maya to release the devotees.
Actually, what happens is the devotees come then under the influence of the yoga maya rather than under the influence of the mahamaya. Sometimes hard to see the difference between the two. We see devotees engaged in devotional service and we think they look like they're just performing material activities like everybody else. But actually those activities, especially each of these 20 items, is not material activity, it's actually transcendental or spiritual activity. When the goal is undeviated, uninterrupted devotional service. Right? So, this point of humility is very important, because if one wants to follow this process of devotional service, then one of the most important points is acharya upasanam, right? Accepting a spiritual master and then following him. And that's where humility comes in also. You know, taking shelter of a guru and following his instructions. You know, we take Prabhupada as our guru, and, you know, ideally we follow his instructions. That's what taking a guru is all about. Not like Prabhupada says, you know, you take a guru and you just have his picture sitting somewhere. Right? The guru can't give you knowledge and you don't even know how to ask questions, Prabhupada says. Right? So the whole purpose of having a guru is not to say, oh, you know, I'm a disciple of whoever. But rather, well, certainly it's good to say I'm a disciple, but your measure, or our measure of discipline, basically, that's what a disciple means, we have to be disciplined. The measure of discipline is how we follow the order of the guru. When we're puffed up, we think, I don't have to follow the order of the spiritual master, I can do it myself. No? But humility means accepting the order of the spiritual master and then following it. So Prabhupada's, I've covered that point. Yeah, the embodied the first paragraph of this purport. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. That's the chetra, right? The living entity is the chetra gya, and the body is the chetra, the field of activities. And the process of knowledge as described here is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th. We've already covered that. Okay, that's good. So the important point is to come to this point of avyabhicharini bhakti. Mam chayo vyabhicharini bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. This is how we get to the level of Brahman understanding, is by continuously being engaged in devotional service. Then one is automatically elevated above the modes of material nature. So, I'll quote this again at the end of this paragraph. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 9 items are of no particular value. But if one takes a devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 9 items automatically develop within him. And then in the next, it's in the same paragraph. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes a devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. So Acharya Upasanam. Rupa Goswami says, Ado Guru Pad Ashraya. So in the beginning, one has to take shelter of a guru. And we do that automatically, as I mentioned before. You know, in ISKCON, when we come to Krishna consciousness, then automatically, you know, we're following chanting 16 rounds, following the principles and attending the programs and so forth. And automatically we're accepting the discipleship, or the discipline, if you like, of Prabhupada. Right? So Prabhupada is our Param Guru, but still all members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness take shelter of Prabhupada wants me on here. So, now, one quite heavy statement that Prabhupada makes here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. Huh? So anything other than these 20 activities is nonsense. And there's So in the next verse, text 13, Krishna says, I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal, Brahman. The spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. So now Krishna is explaining the knowable. The knowable, the object of knowledge, the soul, the super soul. In verse 13, Krishna explains the soul. And in verses 14 to 18, he explains the super soul. And Prabhupada mentions at the bottom of the purport, the description of Brahman mentioned in this verse is in relation to the individual soul. And when the word Brahman is applied to the living entity, it should be understood that he is Vijnana Brahma, as opposed to Ananda Brahma. Ananda Brahma is the supreme Brahman personality of Godhead. In the purport to, I think, 6 and 7, Prabhupada talks about, and we discussed this at length the other day, Anamaya, Pranamaya, Jnanamaya, Vijnana, and Anandamaya, all different aspects of the Brahman feature, right, in the material world. And of course the Anandamaya, or the Ananda Brahma, is Krishna. And the Vijnana Maya, or Vijnana Brahma, Brahman, is the living entity when he realizes himself. Of course, when the Vijnana Brahman engages in the service of the, or is naturally situated, or sorry, not natural, reinstated in his relationship with the Ananda Brahman, then he also experiences Ananda. The Brahman realization, to realize that you're spiritual by nature, is one thing. That you're not the body. But to understand your relationship and to act in that relationship, which is basically the process of knowledge, is a greater development of spiritual realization, and enables us, or facilitates a greater realization of our true transcendental position in devotional service, which is Sat-Chit Ananda, not just the Sat feature and the knowledge feature, but the knowledge feature and the Sat feature engaged in devotional service to serve Krishna gives rise to this Ananda. Text 14. Now this is text 14, then describes the super soul. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way the super soul exists, pervading everything. We're not able to see Krishna in his super soul feature or in his Bhagavan feature, because with our senses they're materially covered. This is a point that's made here. But the Lord, his senses are not materially covered. He actually permeates everything. Yet he's personally present in each place. And so that's why it's said here, his hands and his legs and his eyes and his heads and his faces, his ears. And Prabhupada explains here, the Supreme Lord, this is in the purport. The Supreme Lord can extend his hand without limit. So even though he's situated in Goloka Vrindavan, and that verse is quoted there, Goloka Evanivisatyaki Lakma Bhuta, he's situated in the spiritual world. Yet even though he's situated in the spiritual world, still he can accept our offerings from wherever we want to make them. He can hear our prayers. Because he's actually situated everywhere. The Supreme Lord can extend his hand without limit. The individual soul cannot. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that if anyone offers him a flower or fruit or a little water, he accepts it. If the Lord is a far distance away, how can he accept things? This is the omnipotence of the Lord. Even though he is situated in his own abode, far, far away from earth, he can extend his hand to accept what anyone offers. And then in earlier on, it's also explained there how, you know, everything ultimately is resting on Krishna. Everybody's hands and legs and eyes and heads and ears and so forth. So in that sense, all of our hands and legs and ears are all his, actually. What's that verse in the Yusupanishad? Isavasyam idam savam yat kincha jagatam jagat tena chap tena bunjita madgita kasya sviddhanam. Everything animate or inanimate within the creation is owned and controlled by the Lord, Isha. Isavasyam idam saravam. Everything belongs to him. And one should accept, which is put aside as his quota, right? So even though it all belongs to Krishna, he allows us to have a facility, right? This is it. We've got it. Well, so we can say this is ours. It's been given to us. Right? But ultimately we know this facility, even though we're using it, belongs to who? To Krishna. Yeah. So, as I said, when I think about that verse, it really is a verse that supports the, you know, the ecological movement, if you like, the green movement, because it says, you know, everything ultimately belongs to God, and that he has apportioned, you know, a part of the whole creation to each one of us as much as we require. And the problem is everybody's, you know, trying to accumulate more and more and more for themselves at the expense of others. So he says, you know, we should accept that which is our quota, but not take more, knowing well to whom it belongs. Ultimately it belongs to Krishna, and he's providing everybody with a facility enough to live. But we overdo it. You know, like in the Western countries, in America, for example, you know, we have, there's some statistics, 15% of the world's population or something, but then, you know, they take up 75% of the world's resources. And, you know, and then in the process create all this pollution and contaminate the place. Interesting. So, you know, if we accept everything as belonging to Krishna, and that Krishna has given us as much as we require, then we don't need to impinge upon others' rights, take from them, and then disadvantage them for our own sense gratification. So anyway, yes, as the super soul, he pervades everything, so he's the proprietor. Yes. In the next verse, Krishna is described as nirgunam, or as the super soul, he's described as nirgunam. He has no qualities. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have qualities, that means he has no material qualities, as explained by Prabhupada. In the translation, the super soul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. Right? Materially covered senses, that means. In the bottom of the purport, Prabhupada says, due to materially contaminated senses, we cannot see his form. Therefore, the impersonalists who are still materially affected cannot understand the personality of Godhead. When we have senses, originally spiritual senses, like the super soul, but our senses are covered over by the material energy. So material senses, basically speaking. And so therefore, when it says here that the super soul has no senses, niraguna means here they're not materially contaminated, they're purely spiritual. Next verse, the supreme truth exists outside and inside of all living beings. How come we can't see him? If he exists outside, if he exists inside and outside, why can't we see him? What's the problem? Because we have a materially covered senses, because we have a materially covered mind, then we're not able to perceive the spiritual. But when a devotee follows the processes of knowledge, or the process of devotional service, basically, then one, through Atasi Krishna Namadina Bhavet Graya Mindriyai Sevan Mukihi Jivado Swayamevas Prajada, by engaging in devotional service, one's materially contaminated senses become purified so that we can actually perceive Krishna within everything. We can perceive the super soul. So the supreme truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. Right? He lives in Goloka Vrindavan, but at the same time, he's situated within the heart of all living entities. Right? So he's far, far away, but at the same time, right up close. In the form of the super soul. Yeah. Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, one who has purified his mind and senses by practicing Krishna consciousness in devotional service can see him constantly. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santa sadai vrida yeshu vilokayanti yamsyama sundaram chincha gunasvarupam govinda maripurusham tamaham bhajami. So one whose eyes are anointed with the salve of love of Godhead, prema, then he's able to see Krishna constantly. One who's not purified and whose mind and senses are materially covered, then they're not able to perceive him. It is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita that the devotee who has developed love for the supreme gods can see him always without cessation. And it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 11:54 that he can be seen and understood only by devotional service. Bhaktya tvananyaya sakyaha. Although the super soul appears to be divided amongst all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. We saw that in the 11th chapter. Right? The universal form devours everybody, develops everybody, ultimately maintains everybody. Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, is he divided because he exists as the super soul in everybody's heart? He says, no, he's not. He's the one supreme personality who exists like the sun in the sky. But for each individual looks up, they all see the sun somewhat differently depending on their location. The sun still remains the same. So he's present in everybody's heart, reflected in everybody's heart, but he himself remains one. He is the source of light. Next verse. Last verse, actually, in describing the super soul. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge. And he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. So, just as the Lord's effulgence gives light in the spiritual realm, it's also manifest through the agency of the sun and the moon. Krishna says, I am the light of the sun and the moon, right? So this way he gives, and here is also mentioned, he is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, he is the goal of knowledge. Thus, and this is the last verse in this section 19, thus the field of activities, that's the body, right? Chetra. So iti, thus, chetram, the field of activities, the body. Tata, also, jnanam, knowledge. Gyeyam, the knowable. Cha uktam, are described. Right? Thus, the field of activities, the body, knowledge and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. Has anybody had a chance to read some of the Vyasa Puja offerings? They're online, actually, if you want. There's some really nice ones. Shiva Ram Maharaj gives a nice example. He gives a nice offering. He talks about, there's a book released a few years ago and a video about, it was recollections of Srila Prabhupada from devotees who knew him when he was living in Vrindavan. And he was reflecting on the topics of the book and whether devotees in ISKCON need to, you know, or will benefit even from the recollections of people who knew Prabhupada before he left Vrindavan. And Shiva Ram Maharaj was saying, you know, that actually those devotees, obviously elevated souls, but they didn't actually, they knew Prabhupada, but they didn't actually follow him and follow his instructions, help him with his mission. In fact, you know, you see in the letters, Prabhupada wrote to his godbrothers, come and help me, come and join us, come and preach with me. But nobody did it. Right? So, Shiva Ram Maharaj was putting the question, you know, do these devotees really know Srila Prabhupada? And can we benefit from hearing their realizations about Prabhupada? And his conclusion was, actually, the devotees who really know Prabhupada are the ones who receive his instructions and then follow them, right? Prabhupada says, if you want to know me, then what? Read his books, right? And then what happens when you read Prabhupada's books?
Knowledge.
You get knowledge. And then what do?
You use it.
Use it, yes. Put it in practice. Of course, we may be, you know, we may be better or worse at doing that. But certainly his point was, just as Krishna says, if you want to know me, then surrender to me, right? Serve me. So similarly also, if we want to know Prabhupada, we surrender to Prabhupada and we serve him. And he says, those devotees are the ones who really know Prabhupada. Right? So he says, it's questionable whether we need to find out more about Prabhupada by seeking information from those who might have been Prabhupada's acquaintances in a time gone past. Right? But rather, those who serve Prabhupada, even now, right? They may not have met Prabhupada personally, just like we may not have met Krishna personally, but if we render service to Krishna, then what happens? Krishna reveals himself. There's a transcendental process. Huh? This is the process of knowledge, is by rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he reveals himself. That's just as we, and most devotees feel it, understand it, know it, practically speaking. If I render service to Prabhupada by being a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, then I know Prabhupada. Right? So, only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. So as we serve Prabhupada, then we understand Prabhupada. Not only that, we become like Prabhupada. By knowing Prabhupada, by serving Prabhupada, which ultimately means knowing Krishna and serving Krishna. The guru doesn't say, just serve me. Right? What does the guru say? Serve Krishna. I'll get to you in a minute, Mahatmaji. I've only got 1 minute more to finish and then we've covered this section. So, you know, by rendering service to Krishna, Krishna says, my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. Mamana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. This is the process. Thinking of Krishna, serving Krishna, becoming a devotee. Huh? engaging in devotional service. So, is that yours? It is, huh? Where's Daddy? Go to Daddy. She's saying aye, right? Aye. She can... Huh? Who? Chaitanya. Ah, oh, don't worry about it. Mums like... children like to get mum and boss them around. You know? You notice that? So, the Lord has described in summary the body, knowledge, and the noble. This is the first paragraph in the last purport here. This knowledge is of three things: the knower, the knowable, and the process of knowing. Combined, these are called vigyan, or the science of knowledge. Perfect knowledge can be understood by the unalloyed devotees of the Lord directly. Pure devotees can understand this directly. This is why the process of knowledge is so important. Others are unable to understand. They don't engage in devotional service. Avajananti mammudha. Manushim tanam ashritaha. They think that I'm just a human being. That's how they ask questions like, how can Krishna lift Govardhan Hill on his pinky of his left hand? Because they think he's just an ordinary person. Well, how can he do it? He's God. He can do anything he likes. So the non-devotees can't understand this. The monists say that at the ultimate stage, these three items become one. Right? We're all God. Which, as Prabhupada says, is super puffed up. Right? You think you're God? How come you have to go to the toilet when you don't want to? But, right? You're in India on the bus and it's a hot day, and then all of a sudden you feel, okay, God, get yourself out of this one now. But the devotees do not accept this. Knowledge and development of knowledge mean understanding oneself in Krishna consciousness. We are being led by material consciousness, right? We are being led by material consciousness. How are we being led by material consciousness?
Think that we are the body.
Yeah, that's one way. There are many ways. Yeah. There's no wrong or right answer here. Many ways. How are we being led by material consciousness? Mahatmaji?
First of all, we think we are body.
Yeah, what else? You're just copying him.
Our desires.
Our desires, yeah. How else?
You want to be controller?
Yeah, we want to be the controller.
You want to be enjoyer?
But just simple things, like the advertising industry. What are they doing? They're just pounding us with images. Buy this motor car. Drink this drink. Go and see this movie. Right? Live in this suburb. Buy this house. Get this job. Right? Be a success.
Controller also.
Yeah, be a controller. Well, all of us. Be the enjoyer. Yeah. We've been pushed by material consciousness all the time. Not our consciousness necessarily, but the material consciousness of the society that we live in. What about our parents? Right? Family members. Children. Right? Mummy, can I go and get a video? You don't have kids. Your kids are too young. But it's around the corner. Can I get that M video? When they're children, then they want M videos. When they can look at M videos, then they'll want R videos. There's all this material consciousness that influences us. But as soon as we transfer all consciousness to Krishna's activities and realize that Krishna is everything, then we attain real knowledge. And of course, that's the process. The 20 processes of devotional service, they all have to be linked to that point of devotional service to Krishna. Without devotional service to Krishna, then all of those other items are... Like I said, you know, you can be very humble, but if you're not a devotee, you're just a humble materialist. It's a big deal. In other words, knowledge is nothing. As soon as we transfer all consciousness to Krishna's activities and realize that Krishna is everything, then we attain real knowledge. In other words, knowledge is nothing but the preliminary stage of understanding devotional service perfectly. In the 15th chapter, this will be very clearly explained, so that's coming up. More to come. Rightio. Now, how are we going for time?
Just on that point about knowledge.
Yes.
That's a tendency to confuse knowledge
with love.
Love.
Prem. Prem. Woo.
Knowledge becomes an end in itself. That's a strong tendency.
Give me an example.
Oh, it's very common. People think that if you know, you've got it.
If you have a photographic memory and you can repeat the Bhagavad Gita back verbatim, then immediately that means you've got prem.
Yeah, and it becomes less useful for personal transformation.
Well, why is knowledge helpful? And when can it be an obstacle then?
I think knowledge is helpful because it shows you where you're supposed to be. It's almost like it's a measure of what the goal is, what the objective is, and in that sense it's a measure. But people tend to use it not like that. People tend to use it as the goal. It is an end in itself.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Yes.
And it's very evident all along.
Yes.
It becomes an excuse for change.
That's a good point. A person can become proud of their knowledge, even in devotional service, and what role does that then undermine? What principle does that undermine?
Humility.
Yes. Amanitvam. So, you know, it's mentioned Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadashanaha. A pundit is learned but humble. In other words, he has good qualifications. Learning is actually should bring about humility, not pride. Right? That's real knowledge. Real knowledge means to be humble. And when one's proud of one's learning, then one's defeated that principle of amanitvam. Right? The first principle that's mentioned, the Prabhupada says, most important or essential? Which one does Prabhupada say? Certainly it's the first and essential. So, yes, cultivation of knowledge really has to be, you know, knowledge has to be tested by what can we say? How can we test a person's knowledge? Practical test.
By his actions.
Yes, by his actions. Right? So Krishna says in the second chapter, we've already studied this point. Arjuna says to Krishna, you know, how does he walk? How does he sit? How does he carry himself, basically? And he makes the point, you know, that he makes the point that, you know, a silent person may be presenting himself as learned or wise, but then when he opens up his mouth and speaks, then we can understand he's a fool, you know. But by the same token, also, a person who speaks in a knowledgeable way can also be tested by then how he acts. So this is how we test devotees, right? This is how we test a person. And we see, how sincere is this person? You know, they tell everybody that they should be a servant of Krishna. Well, are they serving Krishna? They tell everybody that they should be a servant of the devotees. Are they actually serving the devotees? So we need to look. Does a person, this person says things and then they're actually putting it into practice? That's the test.
It's interesting, the example of Mahaprabhu himself. When he was still known as Vishvamara, he was so proud. He was extremely proud. Then he didn't have transcendental knowledge. It was only when he took shelter of his Prajapati master and he was given the mantra, he went from being extremely popular, where everybody was afraid of him, when he came down the road and talked to street on the other side because he didn't want to be insulted by him because of his Vedic knowledge and mundane knowledge. And then and then when he took shelter from Vishnu Puri, then he became mad with love and humbled, extremely humbled.
There you go. He went, so Chaitanya Krishna set in the example.
Yeah.
Yeah, good example. From the Leela. Mahatma, you had a comment to make?
Yeah, we should know our constitutional position that we are servants always. We can never be masters. So if we have got knowledge, then we surrender.
Yeah.
And that will show us.
Yes.
Humility and surrender. That will give us, that's a measuring stick, you can say.
Yes.
How much knowledge you possess. If I am proud, then it's not knowledge. It's not realized knowledge. It's just theoretical knowledge.
Theoretical, yes.
Like Jnanis, you know, they think they are very expert. But if they are not humble, then we don't consider them realized knowledge.
Hmm.
They are very proud of them.
Eight. I'm going to print out nine of these. Just bear with me. Gopi Vrindesh, can you go up to the printer room up the top there? And there should be nine pieces of paper printed out. If they're not, we're in trouble. I think they'll be there.
The other point what I was making is that if we know Prabhupada, we should start reading his books and start preaching also.
Yes.
Otherwise,
what quality of the 20 items of knowledge does that fall under? What feature does that fall under without looking at your books? Well, you can look at your book, have a look. What quality is it? What quality is preaching?
There's been a blame on it, application.
Yes, but what feature is it? Mentioned in the purport. The Sanskrit word starts with an A, and the English word starts with an N, and the English word is a compound word.
Are you talking Nivritti and all that?
Starts with a manitvam, yes. Yeah? Did it print? Why don't you hand these out to the assembled Vaishnavas? So we're going to do a self-improvement exercise here. Of course, we're all on the path of self-improvement. But this is a special Has anybody got the answer to my question? Any speculators like to have a go? Non-violence, yes, go to the top of the class. Why does Prabhupada say that non-violence is preaching? What does he say? Ahimsa, non-violence, means what? Who can tell me? Who can explain it? Yes, yes.
He doesn't have the knowledge.
He's committing violence upon himself and upon others. Right? And so preaching means to... I'll read the purport. There's a lot in this. Non-violence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body. Because Mahatma said, if you understand this knowledge, then you'll go out and preach. Right? That was his point. Right? So... Prabhupada says here, non-violence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body, but actually non-violence means not to put others into distress or even put oneself into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance of the material concept of life and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence.
Yeah.
Right? One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. That is non-violence. So that's part of the 20 processes of attaining knowledge, is preaching. Huh? Okay. Go
ahead.
Atmaha.
Atmaha.
Yeah. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be. Yeah. Okay, so on this little exercise here, it says, giving yourself a number between 0 and 10 for each quality, i.e. 10 if you are perfect in that quality, 5 if average, 3 if quite poor, etc. Once you have given a score for each item, identify your 3 major strengths and 3 major challenges. Make a plan how to improve on the latter 3 points. Okay? So, let's spend 5 minutes scoring ourselves. What were you good at? What do you think you're good at? First of all, we can have a bit of humour. Right? We'll see what everybody thinks they're good at. What do you think you're good at? You only want to say what's a bad. You must be some good. Huh? No. All bad.
I don't know.
You don't know? Why not? Don't know. You must have some good qualities, right? You must be good at something. Or put it this way, you must be better at something than another thing. So what things are you better at?
I think cleanliness.
Huh?
I think cleanliness.
Yeah. You've got 2 other family members to look after in that regard? No? What else? Top 3. It's okay. What do you think? The top 3 that are better than the others. I mean, you may all be below 5, but at least some is at 5 and not 0. What else?
Should have no hesitation.
Approaching a spiritual master.
Yeah, that's good. What else?
The importance of self-realization.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, Jamani, what have you got for your top 3 items?
Philosophy of search for absolute truth, accepting the importance of self-realization.
Yeah.
Self-control.
self-control. Ursula, what's your top three, you reckon?
Accepting the importance of self-realization.
Yeah.
Simplicity.
Yeah.
And then lots of time at three.
Well, the best one out of all of those, which do you think?
I guess detachment from the general
mass of people. Yeah, good. Mahatmaji, what were your top three?
Approaching a bona fide spiritual master.
Yeah.
Then second one is perception of evil of birth, death and old age. And accepting the importance of self-realization.
Yeah, good. Bhakti Sahib?
Detachment from the general mass of people. Accepting the importance of self-realization.
Yeah.
To live in solitary place.
Yeah.
Tolerance.
Yeah.
Simplicity.
Yeah.
And accepting the importance of self-realization.
Okay. Thank you.
Approaching this one first spiritual master.
Yeah.
Accepting the importance of self-realization.
Yep.
And simplicity.
Dr. Vrindesh?
Accepting a bond of the spiritual master.
Yeah.
Philosophical search for the absolute truth. Detachment from the general mass of people.
Good. I had philosophical search for the absolute truth, accepting the importance of self-realization and even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. I get plenty of them. Of course, that doesn't mean that I'm any particularly good at any of those things. It just happened to be better than the others. What about the bits that we can improve on? What have you got there? I'll start off. The bits that I can improve on, number one is being without false ego. Being without false egoism, that's the first thing. And number two is renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. And number three is sense self-control. They're the ones that I need to work on. What did you have?
Yeah.
That's not unsurprising. But anyway, go on. But it's your service too. So Prabhupada mentions these are natural objects of affection. Right. So don't try too hard to be detached. Like sannyasi, you know, leave home and... Anyway, go on. Yep.
Renunciation of the object of the satisfaction.
Yeah.
And being without false
egoism. Yeah, okay. What you got there?
Being without false egoism, pridelessness and humility.
Pridelessness?
And humility.
Humility. What did you think? How did you rate yourself, Ursula?
Three times again at my worst. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me. Tolerance. And non-violence,
all my will. And then the
next is
philosophical search for the absolute truth, not to be there, myself. And then two times, three,
even mind and unpleasant events, and renunciation of the objects of sense gratification.
Non-violence.
Yeah.
You don't strike me as being a very violent person.
Well, I need to be more mellow.
More mellow, that might be something else. Mahatmaji.
Well, nothing about preaching anyway.
Worst part, I don't like to live in a solitary place. My mind where other people are there.
Well, so long as they're devotees, you would think.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, okay.
And cleanliness. I think I should be more clean.
Yeah.
I'm not so clean.
Okay.
Either.
Three?
Humility.
Bhakti sir.
Cleanliness.
You don't wash your clothes every day?
More of internal cleanliness.
Uh-huh, okay, right, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one to work on.
Being without attachment and settlement, even-mindedness, amid pleasant and unpleasant events. And the other one is constant and unaware devotion to our
Okay.
Being without attachment, constant and unaware devotion to me.
Okay.
Pridelessness. Constant
and another devotion to being without attachment. Okay. Plan for self-improvement. I'm going to read mine because my battery's going to go flat in a minute. If I don't read it, it'll go off. For being without false egoism, my plan is, Prabhupada mentions we should adopt our real ego, which is as a servant. To release myself from false ego, I shall remain faithful to the service of my guru, and by so doing remain free from the false ego platform. This is what I hope to do anyway. This is my plan. Anyway, actually it's good to write plans down. To renunciation of the objects of sense gratification. By absorbing my mind in understanding Prabhupada's teachings, I shall develop a transcendental vision of the interactions of the Chetra and Chetrika so as to not be bewildered by the attraction of the objects of the senses. So if we study Prabhupada's books, then we should be able to look at things from a philosophical point of view and rise above the workings of the modes of material nature and the interactions of the field of activity. And self-control. As with the first item, I shall control the mind and the senses by always keeping them engaged in devotional service. I will be careful to eat simply and moderately, engaging the tongue in positive service through regulated eating and chanting. Because Prabhupada says if you can control the tongue, then you've got a good chance of engaging all of the other senses. What's your plan?
For renunciation of objects of sense gratification, I have to be in association with the devotees.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to see how simple that is.
Yeah.
So which I can apply.
Yeah.
And by chanting.
Which devotees will you find out how to do simple living from?
Madhati.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
For false egoism, after study, what is how they do so many things and they are so humble and so I have to apologize.
Yeah.
And freedom from the entanglement with children, wife, home address, just to engage in the service of the Krishna and to.
Get your husband to do the cooking and the dishes and the washing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. How's it running?
Being without false egoism. To avoid duplicity. Ready to accept honor and dishonor. And trying to glorify the devotees always in their presence. Or righteousness. If you are proud, then material nature forces and put us down, and when we hit the ground, it's really very hard. So instead, we scrutinizingly read the scriptures and understand and realize our insignificance. And also, because in which of our, when we read the purport, like we somehow fit into the situations where Prabhupada gives instances where we become proud, so at least scrutinizingly reading them, we apply it in our practice.
Mm-hmm.
And for humility, trying to tolerate provoking situations and understand that is one of the essential and important key to practice Krishna consciousness. And try to serve the Vaishnavas who have already achieved it, so that they also get a range of taste to be humble.
Yeah, nice. What's your plan there, Ursula?
The first set of comments relate to need to be non-violent, with a focus on preaching.
Now you're preaching.
Yeah. Kind of.
Maintaining a temple is preaching.
Huh?
Maintaining a temple is preaching.
Yeah. There's lots of opportunity for preaching one-on-one, which I don't really.
Yeah, but not everybody necessarily will be a one-on-one preacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not everybody.
But they need to.
Certainly not bad to do that, but it's not everybody. Because one of the problems in ISKCON is that there are a variety of services, and in fact, some of the backup, you know, supportive services are absolutely essential for the frontline people to go out and do the one-on-one preaching. If somebody's not worshipping the deity, or if the pots are not being washed, or the prasadam is not being cooked, then, you know, it's like, actually, you know what Prabhupada said? Prabhupada said, we read it in the Vyasa Puja book, Prabhupada made a comment, or I read it, he said, you know, don't make me like Alexander the Great, who went and conquered a country, but, you know, just established some outpost there and then said, I've conquered the country. But actually, you know, he hadn't. It just got an outpost there and he sort of went there and now I've conquered. But actual conquering means to change the whole culture. You know, Prabhupada's vision was to change the whole culture of society. So, you know, we can say, well, we went and distributed books, or we did this, or we did that, but, you know, without the support of the rest of the devotees, those devotees wouldn't be able to actually go out and do those things.
I quite understand, but I think the challenge actually is when you're doing your work, you're doing your service, you're doing it constantly in the mood of something, and you're constantly aware of that. That's why it ties in with my other weak points where I don't have Krishna in my mind all the time. You know? So, and this is my strategy. And in that sense, therefore, I'm a poor preacher. Because remember, I come from the family world. I've had lots of responsibilities, big responsibilities, and I have to pull up a lot of tough jobs. So this is like a light job.
Maybe.
For me, it's not.
Yeah,
really,
but it still has its challenges, I guess.
It has its challenges.
But here's the thing. Why is it a light job? Make it a harder job then.
Yeah.
I can make it a bit harder for you if you want. No, but here's an interesting, you know, one of the devotees went to Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and he was complaining about, he says, Prabhupada, I can't think of Krishna. All I'm thinking about is bags of cement and rods of steel, you know, he's building, you know, bricks and the, you know, the Indians are always cheating us. You know, the local people, the local businessmen are always cheating us. And Prabhupada made a comment. He said, you know, do you think Arjuna was, you know, meditating on Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? He was firing his arrows and killing people and making sure that he himself wasn't killed. So Prabhupada goes, really, he really emphasizes this point that service is actually thinking of Krishna. And even if you may not be thinking of Krishna directly, you're thinking of Krishna's service. And at the time of death, Krishna will remember you for the service that you've done. And will just
No, you're right. But maybe it's the woman who says, I want to feed it from the demon.
Okay.
Okay.
Work on that? Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore, I'm saying the most important challenge for me is to cultivate spiritual knowledge and to educate myself.
But that is an important point, though.
Yeah.
Good for all of us, yeah. You know, to develop an internal meditation on Krishna. It's a fact.
If I do that, if I cultivate, make myself spiritually strong, I'll become more tolerant. I'll become, in a mundane sense, less violent. I'm very frank, and a lot of people can't understand frankness. They can't tolerate being kind of direct.
Whiplashed.
Pardon?
Whiplashed.
Well, I can't see.
Or lip-lashed.
Okay. And if I can't get the knowledge, I won't be thinking of Krishna, because there's so many wonderful examples in the literature that can guide one's every step that I'm not taking advantage of. And actually, when you share those things with people that you come into contact with, they're fascinated and they constantly, they get drawn. So I just think of the part-time staff on Wednesday, the moment in between, they keep saying, tell me about the hospital, tell me about this and the other, and I tell them, they get so enlightened. So
you are preaching?
Teensy meensy.
Good.
And then secondly, again, related to study, applicate, the biggest personal transformer is devotional service. There's no doubt about it. You can learn all you want. If you don't do devotional service, nothing's going to happen. You're going to get nowhere. So it's increased devotional service.
Theoretical.
Both the theory, the practice, and the application.
Yes.
I need to do all three.
Yes, and I think that's good.
Because I'm doing devotional service already, at least attempting to do devotional service, if I strengthen myself spiritually through knowledge, the practice and the application just gets better. So I need to do those things.
Mm. Yeah, good.
But, yeah, and then the last point is even-mindedness, unpleasant and all, you know, that point. You can't force that.
So what's your plan?
It comes naturally with, as you become more mature in Krishna consciousness. So stay the long haul and grow your maturity by doing the same. Consciously, it's a lifetime forever commitment.
Your plan, Maharaj?
I'm just telling her she should go and preach to her brothers. They are very academic professors.
Yes, but family members are sometimes the hardest people to preach to. Especially her brothers.
You can go and live with them for a few weeks, cook nice prasadam, and they'll be interested to hear you then.
They'll drive her up the wall. And because of her forthright nature, they'll get annoyed with her.
But if you give them preaching, nice prasadam.
Yeah. Nice prasadam and keep quiet.
Yeah.
What's your plan, Mahatmaji?
Practice good chanting.
Now, how does that, which item does that address? The first item is?
Yeah.
Humility. Practice good chanting. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Then, scrutinizing and understanding the scriptures.
Sure.
And third thing is preaching as much as possible by increasing my service to Krishna.
Okay, Bhakti sir.
Just one for cleanliness, internal cleanliness, improve chanting, improve quality of chanting, so heart will get cleansed. Second one, humility, is mentioned as not anxious to be honored by others. That's humility as mentioned in the purpose. So just do whatever service I'm doing, I want to do just as a matter of duty, not expect honor. Third one is tolerance.
We'll put you in charge of the rubbish, the rubbish department.
Tolerance is mentioned as practice to bear insult and dishonor from others. So the plan is just if get dishonor or insult from others, not to retaliate and try to improve.
Be humble when they're picking on you. Huh? That's good.
Okay. First one, dealing without attachment, for that reading Srila Prabhupada's books and improving my chanting, and since then I should try to be attached to Krishna's service. And second one, even mindedness and pleasant and unpleasant events, for that I should take it as Krishna's mercy, unpleasant incident. Take it as Krishna's mercy and try to understand what is there for me to learn.
Mm.
And seek out help of Krishna, of her prayers.
Or even his devotees.
And third constant and unalloyed devotion to me. So for that, I have to always make sure that I am reading regularly, associating with devotees, and chanting nice songs.
First is humility. Should accept my own faults and try to improve on it, rather than I was right. Second is being without attachment. It's diverting my attachment from the things which I should not be attached to, developing attachment towards devotees and being fixed in my service. And the other is constant and unbroken devotion to me. I should read more about Krishna and try to understand the philosophy and try to follow the instructions of senior Vaishnavas.
Do you have any essays in here? Huh? There you go. There's something you can work on. Add that to your list. There.
Do not take credit and pass it on to Guru and Krishna. And understand my own real nature. Understand my own real nature.
Understand your own realizations.
Not realizations. Real nature in
the sense. Oh, real nature.
Yeah, nothing. So
you're actually just a dog. Just a dog. I'm a dog. Somehow I've got two legs so I can walk around like a human being. My mentality is just like a dog. Yeah?
Freedom. Constant and another devotion to me. Absorption in Prabhupada's books and meditate on what I have read and fixing consciousness in the service and attitude changing and attachment accept things which are really the point, not try to overdo it.
Good. Well, thank you for sharing, Ushua.
Can you talk a little? I'm thinking about something that's reaching to the kind of slogan for the classic day and saying, stop acting humble and take the humble road. Can you just talk about the difference between those two?
Being humble?
Yeah, you know, the tendency.
And falsely humble?
Yeah, there's so much nonsense.
Humble.
And take the humble road.
Well, Prabhupada says here that humility means not wanting to be recognized by others, right? And the boys brought out some interesting points. When we're criticized, we tend to defend ourselves.
Yeah.
So not wanting to defend ourselves also, because that's a form of self, self-praise, if you like. You know, defending, oh, well, hang on a second, you know. I experienced this recently, actually. I was getting a caning from a few devotees that were criticising me for mismanagement, and not in the temple, although that's probably appropriate also. But it hurt me too, because these are devotees who are my friends, And it was unjustified, as far as I was concerned. It was unjustified criticism. Certainly, there are other aspects to the situation where other people could be criticised far more than me. But I sort of thought, well, if I protest, then, you know, it's not right. You shouldn't really defend it, but it really hurt. But then I learned that actually the benefit was also in just tolerating, you know, because there's two things with humility. You know, Mahaprabhu mentions Trinadupi Sanichina Tororiva Sahishnina Amanadina Amanadina. So the first items, humility and tolerance, and then not wanting respect from others. So all of these things go together, right? So, you know, sometimes we actually have to tolerate injustice even in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes there are situations where you'll be criticized and it's not just. But even if it's not just, one has to tolerate that. And then because the devotees are who they are, your tolerating the situation actually helps diffuse the situation, calm it down. If you just respond coolly, okay, I accept that there may be some, you know, there's an error here. Okay, I accept there's an error, I might have made a mistake. Rather than, hang on a second, what about him, what about that, what about the other thing? But you actually keep it on an even keel so that you can keep focused on the main thing, which is devotional service. Other people might want to have a go at you or whatever, for whatever reason. They have their reasons for doing it. And of course Krishna, by the same token, I felt Krishna was creating an environment which was actually good for me. I might not have, it wasn't pleasant to be criticized unjustly or unnecessarily, but it was good for my false ego to take a bit of a bashing, right? And then I noticed that then you can also then cultivate other qualities like tolerance and forbearance, and also this idea of just keeping focused. Okay, we're here to do a service. Let's not get distracted by another argument or some other kind of distraction. Let's just keep focusing on what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve. And if you keep focused on that, then everybody else tends to then come towards that also, right? So, but then there is, I'm the most fallen, there's nobody more fallen than me kind of humility, which is just a pain in the neck, right? So we don't want that false kind of humility, false humility. As Prabhupada says, you're not the worst anything. I'm the most fallen. You're not the most anything. So we should, mind you, if somebody else was being criticised, what happened then eventually was one of the other devotees said, hang on a second, you guys are all just frothing at the mouth and, overreacting. Let's just deal with the issues. And so another devotee then came to my defence. So if somebody else is being criticised or whatever, then it's okay for us to come to the defence of that person. But then again, also keeping focused on, the service at hand, what needs to be done. So that, in one sense, is, not looking for respect from others and tolerating difficult situations, of which there will be many in devotional service. Prabhupada mentions that's the nature of preaching. Preaching is such that it automatically puts you at odds with material energy and it puts you at odds with materialistic people. So there will always be conflict for preachers. And he gives the example of Jesus Christ. Prahlad Maharaj, he's just a 5-year-old boy. But then his father wanted to kill him because he was preaching. Right? So, as preachers, we automatically put ourselves in conflict with people. So keeping focused on the service, we may get some praise. We will. No, definitely we will get some praise. But we shouldn't. Gopi Vrindesh's point is nice. We pass that on to Krishna and the spiritual master. We don't accept that for ourselves. And humility. That's something. Prabhupada says here. My computer's gone off. Can somebody give me?
What is the advice? How should the situation where somebody offends another person?
My computer's battery, it's just shut down.
Go on.
When one person offends someone else.
Yep.
Quite badly.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize he's offended another, that individual. And they then embark on what they think is humble behavior, but it's so irritating. How should a situation like that be managed? Because if you offend someone, it's almost like clear out of the way, let the dust settle. But people tend to then want to be completely servile. Let me serve you, let me serve you, it fans the conflict even more.
Say that last bit again?
It fans the conflict even more.
The couple of sentences before that?
The offender and the offended. The offenders
actually the server aware and wants to serve the offended person even more.
Well, it sounds to me like
a recipe for disaster.
Well, the person who's offended should get off their high horse and accept the apologies of the person who's trying to offer apologies. So this can be a real problem, especially amongst somewhat neophyte devotees, that somebody may have committed an offence, but then the person that got offended won't allow the other person to apologise. They want to maintain the animosity. Do you know what I mean?
It's depending on the nature of the offence.
Yes, but this is just an observation. It doesn't have to be always like that.
Yes.
If the person who is offering an apology is not sincere, right, then you have another problem.
That's
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Time will heal all these things.
It becomes a ritual. Somebody offend another person, is down on the ground, pay obeisance, next week offend again.
Yeah.
And somebody goes and asks and says, get up. Stop paying obeisances and go away now. That's just
yes. See, time will generally heal these things. And, sometimes you actually have, on both sides, you have people who have some issues, some personal problems, you know what I mean? Each one of them has to go through some form of purification to rectify their own internal. And what actually is happening is Krishna's just bringing them together to rub off the rough edges on each other. But they don't see that. They see that you're doing this to me. They don't see that Krishna's behind it. You're doing it to me. They don't understand that actually it's Krishna's trying to, for the both of them, bring out some issue or some element of their character or nature that needs improvement on both sides. Do you know what I mean? So it's interesting in this pastime of Krishna removing the yadus from the Bhagavatam that we're studying at the moment. Krishna created an environment, right, whereby the characteristics that were not favourable to devotional service manifest. Right. So Krishna sometimes creates an environment where, these qualities in devotees come up, our impurities come up. This is our process. The process of devotional service brings out anattas, attachments to unwanted or unnecessary things, prestige or position or whatever, And so, sometimes in a circumstance you can't do anything except act as an observer. You may even give advice, or you can act as an advisor or whatever, but sometimes you can't even do anything about the circumstance, because it's just that's they're going to go through it. Right? One of the kids picks up a toy and then the other one wants it. And they're fighting. Yeah, you can go. I'm only going to say one more thing. As for actual advancement, Prabhupada says here, as for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. Right? He can judge by these items. So these 20 items that we've got on this sheet, these are our measure of advancement. Right? Prabhupada says. This is knowledge. This is. And as you pointed out, knowledge actually means devotional service. That was the point that I brought up when we first started. Jnan. How jnana actually relates to and is basically transformed into, or is basically part of devotional service, just as karma is part of devotional service. Action and knowledge. Devotional service is actually a combination of jnana and vairagya. And vairagya is a form of action, if you like. A particular kind of activity. And Prabhupada, Prabhupada taught a specific kind of vairagya. Not that we're all super duper renounced, you know, just wearing a loincloth, eat one meal a day type of renunciation. Huh? But actually, yukta vairagya, which means engaging things in devotional service. That's our bhakti karma, if you like. And bhakti jnana means, you know, knowledge of the process of devotional service, not just accumulation of lots and lots of knowledge to be a big, 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 you know, learned person. And then don't do anything. That's how we test. We test a person. In Krishna consciousness, we test a person by seeing how much they're engaged in devotional service. We test a person's discipleship, if you like, by how much they're actually disciplined by their guru and actually following the order of the spiritual master. That's how we test. Huh? Anyway, there's the 20 items. So, thanks for sharing that with us. Inspiring. Back to the kids. Back to the family, huh? Okay, back to the preaching.